The time is now 10:01, and we'll begin the meeting of the D.C. Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier. I'm calling this meeting to order. As chairperson, I have here with me Shamari Wade, Norma Hutchinson, and Darren Sobin. We are the sitting members of the board, and therefore we have a quorum. The first item on the agenda is adoption of the previous month's public meeting, which was in July. But before we take up a vote, I question whether we need to table this until the next meeting. I reviewed the first couple of pages and noticed that there was no input in some sections from OOG. And perhaps what was posted in the Dropbox is different than what you all have, but there are blank sections for OOG.
Also, I reviewed them, and I don't see where it reflects when I stepped out of the room for discussion of one of the cases, and that needs to be reflected. I think it was the...
Is that an executive session?
No, no, this is the one I recused myself from.
Do you just want the minutes corrected?
What I'm saying is what was in the Dropbox may be different than what you all have. We can table this until the next meeting, but they need to be...
Well, the only issue for us is posting these minutes. If it's tabled, they won't be posted for another month. But we don't want something that's inaccurate to be posted either.
Correct. Okay.
Maybe we can vote on them with the understanding that the corrections will be made.
I'm not sure, because the minutes I'm looking at, there is an OOG report.
Okay.
Is there something more?
Within the OOG report.
Page 2. On page 2, there
is
advisory opinions.
Yes, I see
there's
it.
There's nothing there.
I see it. I think the best way to remedy this. I mean, we certainly posted the audio, so it's not as though there's not going to be anything that's been posted.
Correct.
Yeah.
So let's table this, and we will vote on the meeting minutes at the September.
For July and August.
For July and August.
Okay.
At September. The next matter is the report from Open Government, Director Allen.
Good morning, Chairperson Collier and members of the board. I am Nikkel Allen, Director of the Office of Open Government, and I am pleased to present this monthly report on the activities of the Office of Open Government. The OOG has continued to fulfill its mission of ensuring that all persons are entitled to full and complete information regarding the affairs of the district government and the actions of those who represent them. The office issued formal advice concerning the Freedom of Information Act to the Metropolitan Police Department on June 28, 2018. The office's legal opinion addressed the following issues. One, whether it is consistent with FOIA for MPD to require requesters of certain information about themselves to attach to the request proof of their identity at the time of the submission. And two, whether attorneys making FOIA requests on behalf of clients must supply proof of identification for the client or the attorney, such as a copy of the client's or the attorney's government-issued identification. And three, whether attorneys making FOIA requests on behalf of their clients must provide proof of representation, such as a signed authorization or a retainer agreement. The OOG made the following recommendations to MPD, the implementation of which would bring the agency into compliance with FOIA. First, immediately include language on its webpage and the district's FOIA portal stating that a FOIA request may be submitted without the identity verification requirements by first-party requesters and their attorneys when seeking incident reports, accident reports, and 911 transcripts. And second, immediately remove the requirement that attorneys making FOIA requests on behalf of clients supply a copy of their retainer agreement as proof of representation. Ronald Harris, Deputy General Counsel for MPD, in an email forwarded to OOG Attorney Johnny Barton, dated August 8, 2018, confirmed that MPD would implement the OOG's advice Mr. Harris stated that MPD was following the guidance of OOG and modifying the language set forth in the department's FOIA portal, and he believes the language had been modified that morning. The other recommendation provided by the office is being presently reviewed by MPD. With respect to informal Open Meetings Act advice and FOIA advice, since the July 9th board meeting, the OOG responded to 8 FOIA and 5 Open Meeting Act requests for substantive informal legal advice. And
I'm sorry, Director, can I just stop you for just a second?
Yes.
Which of the things is MPD agreed to do?
They've agreed to modify the FOIA portal and the website.
Right, to adopt which of our recommendations?
So that would be the first recommendation.
A FOIA request may be submitted without the identity verification requirements?
I believe that that's what MPD has agreed to do. I will verify that with MPD.
It seems to me the second one should be the no-brainer, because you shouldn't have to I can't imagine I know Mr. Harris, and I can't imagine that they'd require a retainer agreement to
right.
be submitted.
Right.
It's not it's no one's business but between the attorney and the client.
I assume they want to make sure that the attorney is actually representing the client. But again, I think as you said, that is a no-brainer, and
but you don't.
I mean, subject to the bar if they misrepresented.
And even if the attorney's not representing the client, they, under FOIA, they could still make the request on their own.
True. That's true.
Okay.
Okay. Just we'll follow up with MPD on that issue.
Thank you.
You're
sorry to interrupt.
Oh no problem. Informal advice. There were 5 Open Meeting Act requests for substantive informal legal advice and assistance. In addition, there were 14 requests for technical assistance. Many of the requests for informal legal advice that the OOG receives requires detailed responses, even though these responses do not rise to the level of a formal advisory opinion. I would like to summarize some notable issues of informal advice. The office issued informal advice concerning emergency meetings. The OOG provided informal advice to a public body concerning notice requirements under the OMA to conduct an emergency meeting and whether the public body may exclude staff from a closed executive session. The OOG's response was that the OMA allows for a board to conduct an emergency meeting when it is necessary to discuss an urgent matter. The OMA requires that the public body provide public notice of the emergency meeting to members of the public at the same time the public body provides notice of the emergency meeting to its members. Such public notice may be achieved by posting publicly on the public body's website or on the website of the District of Columbia, which is dc.gov. The office also issued informal advice concerning closed meetings. The OOG provided informal advice to a public body concerning the presence of agency staff and counsel during closed meetings. The OOG advised that the OMA does not specifically address whether or not a public body may exclude staff and legal counsel during a closed meeting. The OMA does, in the context of meeting closures, imply the presence of staff and counsel in certain instances. DC Official Code Section 2-575B2, B3, B4A, and B412 expressly provide for the presence of staff and legal counsel during closed meetings for the specific purposes stated in the subsections. These provisions may be interpreted as limiting the staff and legal counsel to being present only during such closures. However, the bylaws and internal policies of the public bodies may differ and must be taken into account as both have an impact and govern this matter. Lastly, the office provided informal advice during a public body's meeting in the Vega hearing room on July 25, 2018. The OOG attended for the purpose of monitoring and providing assistance with complying with the OMA, a public hearing of the Major Crash Review Task Force. The task force is one of the newer public bodies. The OOG was present during the open session of the meeting and provided assistance to the task force in transitioning from an open session to a closed session.
Excellent.
With respect to trainings, the OOG conducted OMA training for the Child and Family Services Agency and FOIA training for the Office of Unified Communications. The OOG also attended a record retention training conducted by the D.C. Archivist Bill Branch and an agency performance plan management presentation by the Executive Office of the Mayor. The OOG is working with the Office of Government Ethics on a record retention schedule for Vega. The OOG participated in trainings with Mr. Branch to help it determine which records are unique to OOG and should be included in the Vega records retention schedule. The OOG is also voluntarily participating in the agency performance management plan process. The EOM training was to assist the OOG in developing its plan for fiscal year 2019.
And when do you think you'll have that ready?
Hopefully by the end of this month. And with respect to litigation, the OOG has not received from the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs the one-week advance notice of its meeting pursuant to the court's March 5, 2018 order. However, there is no indication that the commission is in violation of the order at this time, as no meetings of the commission have been publicly noted since April 17, 2018. Lastly, the office has engaged in significant outreach activities since the July board meeting. With respect to our website, on August 1st, 2018, the OOG distributed electronically the OpenGovist, our quarterly newsletter. The newsletter is also available for review on the open-dc.gov website. The OOG also updated its website to include online submission forms for public government agencies and public bodies to request OMA and FOIA advice. Further, in my first month as OOG director, I have been meeting with members of the open government community, including advocacy groups and the district government, to introduce myself and get a better understanding of the issues concerning the OMA and FOIA. I've met with the Open Government Coalition, the Open Government Advisory Group, the Mayor's Office of General Counsel, the Mayor's Office of Talents and Appointments, and the Federal Government Office of Government Information Services. I will continue these outreach activities in an effort to increase the OOG's effectiveness in fulfilling its mission and to increase the OOG's effectiveness in facilitating constructive communication between the district government and the public when information is sought.
And how were you received?
I think I was received well. The meetings went very well. I was able to glean what the issues are and also to just receive feedback on how the office can perform better in the future and what are the issues of concern. And I believe the door is open for continued dialogue, and this is very important to this office to continue meeting with the stakeholders so that we can be an effective voice for the issues.
And just broadly speaking, are you able to categorize issues of concern?
Broadly, I think training was the focus. All groups that I spoke with wanted this office to conduct more trainings on FOIA and open meetings.
Interesting. That segues into my next question. You mentioned that you had added to the website a form for different agencies to request advice. Consider also having a way for them to request training by you or Mr. Barton through the website as well.
We certainly will work on getting that up. And this concludes my board report. I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Director
Wolfenbarger, good morning.
Good morning. Report by the Director of Government Ethics, update on status of our operations. We currently have 41 investigations that are open. We opened 3 in the past month and closed 3. We corrected some of our statistics from a previous report, so there's really not been any increase in the number of cases, just the stats we had reported last month were a little off. We've got 8 investigations that are currently stayed, and of the 41 that are currently open, there are several on my desk that are waiting to be closed. I was on vacation last week and just haven't had time to get around to getting rid of those. Of the 8 cases that have been stayed, one is a Maryland court fugitive case. One is with D.C. Superior Court from the Office of Employee Appeals. 4 are related to ongoing investigations by the Office of the Inspector General, and 2 are pending at the Office of the Attorney General with Civil False Claims Act litigation. Publication and reporting obligations. We have posted the third quarter report to our website. That report is in the Dropbox, and we have also completed the third quarter's performance statistics.
Can we stop here for a second and go through these? Because I'm not sure I understand some of them. And admittedly, I just started looking at them this morning. I am concerned, as I've expressed before, about the number of outstanding investigations and how it impacts the statistics. And I see here, like measure 2, conduct timely and appropriate investigations and enforcement actions. For quarter 3, we are back up to 100%. When in quarter 1, we were down as 78%. Explain to me how you're reporting them, because the numbers appear to be going up in terms of open cases. So can you explain these numbers to me?
I will defer to Mr. Flowers, who took care of our statistics.
Okay.
Is this measure number 2, conduct timely and appropriate investigations and enforcement actions?
Yes.
That reflects that we closed 3 cases. And this statistic only measures cases that are closed. So if we close 3 cases and 2 were closed within 120 days, then it would be 66%. But we closed, the 3 cases that were closed within 120 days.
So that only measures open and closed. It does not measure the cases that are staying open.
Does not. It only measures closed cases. The cases that were closed during that quarter, how long were they? Were those cases open?
Okay.
So that was 3 out of 3.
Okay. That answers my question.
Next item on our report is related to trainings and outreach. Attended by our staff, our auditor Ishmael took a course on project management essentials. Attorney Cooks attended 2 ADA-related courses, one entitled Accessible Outreach on Social Media and the other Title II Roundtable Discussion. General Counsel Flowers also attended the annual meeting of the Uniform Law Commissioners. Conducted by our staff since the date of the last meeting, we conducted or participated in 5 trainings, one more than the 4 reported at the last meeting. The trainings consisted of 2 new employee orientations, our monthly ethics training, a training held at OAG, and a Learn, Earn, Advance, and Prosper LEAP orientation program training for young people. Upcoming, the 2018 Ethics Day will be held on October 4th, followed by the monthly board meeting. The following entities have confirmed participation: Office of the General Counsel for the D.C. Council, also Office of Campaign Finance, Office of the Inspector General, D.C. Bar, and, of course, OOG. We have already received positive inquiries from those employees who attended last year and plan to attend this year.
Excellent. Can you all forward the final trifold, the schedule?
I think we're still in the process of fleshing that out.
Okay.
Newsletter. In keeping with the board's direction that OGE and OOG should collaborate more closely with one another on subjects of mutual interest, Nikhil and I have been working on ways to expand our ability to disseminate content from both offices to district agencies and employees as well as the general public. Because BEGA is also one of the few district agencies whose operations are nearly universal in scope. When it comes to impacting other district agencies, we are engaging OCTO in discussions to possibly allow us to disseminate both OGE's monthly newsletter and OOG's quarterly newsletter via mass email to all DC.gov email account holders, along the lines of Mayor Bowser's weekly newsletters and the messages that DCHR Director Gibson sends out on a fairly regular basis. OOG and OGE will also cross-promote one another's newsletters when our own newsletters are published. We're planning to relaunch OGE's newsletter at some point in September. I have assigned our new attorney, Sonia King, with primary responsibility for preparing and organizing OGE's monthly newsletter. One of our major goals is to transform the newsletter from a Word or PDF publication into something more like Mayor Bowser's weekly newsletters, where the content is directly embedded in the email, as well as being available for download from the agency's website. And Sonia is reaching out to some of her former colleagues at OAG, who have experience preparing similar materials for their guidance and assistance.
Excellent.
Advisory opinions and advice, informal advice approximately 66. This is substantially the same as the 64 reported at the last meeting. I believe we talked during the last meeting about inquiry we had regarding a possible grassroots organization engaging in inappropriate lobbying or unregistered lobbying called PAVE. We also received a similar complaint regarding an environmental advocacy group that may have been conducting similar activity, and we have prepared letters to go to those two agencies or organizations, inquiring, seeking additional information regarding exactly what type of activity they've been conducting to try to find out whether they fall within the lobbying requirements that would need to register and file activity reports.
You made a reference to our new attorney, Sonia King. I don't believe I've had the pleasure. Would you like to introduce her?
Well, she was supposed to be here, and unfortunately, when I prepared the notes, I did not realize that she had previously arranged vacation. She was going back to New York for her father's birthday this weekend. So I apologize for not being able to introduce her yet.
We'll see her in September.
Absolutely. So we will keep the board informed as we gain that additional information regarding the possible unregistered lobbying activity. Formal advice requests. We have received no formal advice requests since the board's last meeting. Ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. I believe we have received inquiries from at least one lobbying firm inquiring about the effective date of the changes to the lobbying statute and whether we would be offering guidance prior to the implementation of those new changes. The new lobbyist quarterly filing reporting requirement is effective as of January 1st, 2019. The definition changes, including the change to bring procurement lobbying within the statute, will take effect on October 1st, 2018. We are in the process of preparing a proposed implementation timeline with target dates for us to complete tasks such as updating our training materials, possibly asking the committee staff to review the updated training materials and provide their feedback to ensure that our guidance doesn't conflict in some way with the council's legislative intent in changing the statute, and conducting a training program for lobbyists on the changes.
In my experience, you're going to have to really push the lobbyists to show up at the training because they just don't like to come. But I think it's crucially important that they be trained on this new requirement now. Otherwise, you're going to be bringing tons of enforcement actions.
Sure, and I think probably we had talked previously about obtaining a go-to webinar type subscription. I think this would be a great opportunity for us to utilize that. I am planning on acquiring that before the end of the fiscal year, so that may make it a little easier for lobbyists who tend to be busy folks to be able to at least participate from their office. Rulemaking. As we informed the board at our last meeting, we are currently drafting rules to further flesh out the procedures and standards to be applied to both FDS and lobbyist waivers and appeals. Once we began the process, we learned that relevant provisions were in three different places, the Ethics Act, the DPM, and our own rules. And we can only amend our own rules, so we have to ensure that what we propose is consistent with those other authorities, and we are moving forward in that regard. We've had one draft already circulated, and our staff is reviewing it and offering feedback and making sure we're all on the same page regarding the best approach for moving forward. Budget, the solicitation for our new case management system has closed, and OCP has informed me that they have selected a qualified bidder for the project. OCP has further indicated that they are working to get all the paperwork completed and approved by today. Per the terms of the solicitation, the new system must be operational by September 30th. Other than that, we are continuing to work on completing the remainder of our planned FY18 acquisitions within our allocated budgetary funding. One thing I did want to bring to the board's attention, because I know there were some technical difficulties apparently with the iPads recently, that is pending. The request for technical services was submitted, I think, July 27th, 28th, something like that. The money has been advanced in SOAR per Mohammed. And we should be receiving those soon.
Great.
Staffing. We have one permanent position that is currently vacant, the paralegal position that I had originally proposed to turn into an investigative auditor position. However, I asked DCHR on July 27th to reclassify that vacant position into a third investigator position in light of our other investigator's absence from the office, and DCHR should complete that reclassification and post the position next week. I would like to take this opportunity to introduce you to our new compliance specialist, Nikayla Redd. Nikayla joined our office on July 9th, but was unable to attend the last board meeting because she was tied up at new employee orientation. She is an attorney who is licensed to practice law in D.C., New York, New Jersey, and Virginia, and comes to us with an impressive background, including compliance and investigation work at several large and mid-sized private law firms. And we believe she's been an excellent addition to our staff, and will be holding down the lobbyist and FDS programs for us.
Welcome, Ms. Brad.
Yes, welcome. Litigation, status of pending cases. Garen Price, both Mr. Price and the district have filed their briefs. The case is currently awaiting calendaring. Edwin Edwoke, FDS designation appeal, dismissal of the petition announced by Judge Holman on D.C. Superior, in D.C. Superior Court on February 9th, 2018. No change from the last meeting. We continue to wait for the final written order from Chambers affirming the board's ruling. Larry Hicks, this is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. The board imposed the fine in February 2014 after a contested hearing. Mr. Hicks's appeal to Superior Court was dismissed because we had not furnished the record. The OAG refiled this case, and a show cause hearing was held Wednesday and continued to Thursday yesterday to resolve service of process issues. Rashawn French versus Bega, D.C. Superior Court. An employee is appealing the imposition of a $600 ministerial fine. The pro se case was filed on April 6th. The next status hearing in this matter is set for November 30th, 2018 at 2 p.m. And the last matter is Dillon versus Bega. This is an employment matter involving a separated employee. OAG is preparing an appeal of the ALJ's initial finding in favor of the employee.
Is there a stay of the ALJ order pending appeal, or how does that work?
I really haven't been informed one way or the other. We've been in contact with the Office of the Attorney General. They're handling the appeal. They have not informed us that we need to do anything besides assist them with the appeal.
Okay.
And this is appeal to actually the commission.
Right.
Before it goes to court, so there's still several steps remaining.
Okay.
Next item on the report is lobbyist financial disclosure matters. There are currently 317 non-filers remaining on the financial disclosure side of the house, 90 of which are area neighborhood commissioners. We sent a non-compliance notice to the non-filers on August 1st, giving them until August 10th to come into compliance. That notice was sent out via email and hard copy. We will begin the fines and enforcement process after August 10th. We have prepared the list. We are required to submit to the DC Register, and we should be ready to submit by this coming Monday. One matter we did resolve was the publication requirement applies to financial disclosure reports, not to certifications filed by ANCs or candidates. So we wanted to make sure that we were acting appropriately in composing that list of non-filers, but we do have the discretion to publish the same information for those required to file certifications, but there is no statutory obligation to do so.
And so the list that you're submitting, does it include the ANCs or not?
I do not. I believe it does not. Is that correct?
No. Okay.
FDS partial waiver factors, as discussed in the portion of the meeting on rulemaking, we have begun drafting the rulemaking to implement standards for FDS partial waivers, FDS designation appeals, and lobbyist fine waivers. Lobbyists. We have begun to receive payments from some of the 28 nonprofit organizations that Ishmael identified as not qualifying for the reduced registration fee, $50 versus $250, which is available to 501c3 organizations only. I have asked the organizations to reimburse us for the underpayments related to January 2017 and January 2018, those registration periods. To date, we have collected, it's actually an additional $5,200 in lobbyist registration fees based on the results of Ishmael's audit. And if all 28 organizations bring themselves into compliance, we would recover an additional $11,200 in registration fees. Lobbyist activity reports. Lobbyist reminders went out to all registered lobbyists on Monday, June 4th, 2018. The deadline for filing lobbyist activity reports was July 10th, 2018, and as of last month, we had received 119 activity reports. There are 7 lobbyist non-filers. Non-confidential investigations. In re Rochelle Wilson, this is a formal investigation that we have previously discussed involving a former Aussie employee who, before her separation from the district government, failed to submit full, accurate, and complete financial disclosure forms for 3 consecutive years. On July 19, 2018, Ms. Wilson appeared before me to show cause why she should not be fined for her continued failure to file complete, accurate, and true public financial disclosure statements. Ms. Wilson introduced no evidence that she did not violate the code of conduct, and I do not believe the evidence she submitted as mitigating circumstances constituted sufficient cause to excuse her from being fined for her violations. Thus, we are preparing findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a written order imposing a ministerial fine in that matter.
Curiously, how did that work? Like, how did you record the session, or?
Yes, it was recorded. We had Ileana and Asia put on the office's case regarding the information that was not included on the public on the FDS reports. Then we gave Ms. Wilson the opportunity to rebut any of that evidence to indicate that she did not really have an ownership interest in the ventures in question. She really didn't deny having any having those relationships, but offered some explanations as to why she felt her actions through some of those ventures generated some public benefit for less fortunate women who received makeovers and things of that nature. I gave her an additional week to submit any documentation that she might have in support of her position, which she took the opportunity and did submit several printouts of articles and things of that nature regarding her activities related to those ventures, which I've taken into consideration, but as I indicated earlier, I don't believe that it constitutes good cause to not be fined. It's just mitigating factors in general that may influence the amount of the fine.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next matter is N. Ray Courtney Snowden. This is an investigation referred by the office.
Is that one I'm supposed to step
yep.
out of the room on?
Okay.
Record reflect. I'm leaving the room.
You may continue.
Thank you. This is an investigation referred by the Office of the Inspector General involving the Deputy Mayor for Greater Economic Opportunity. According to the OIG's report of investigation, on three occasions in late summer 2015, Ms. Snowden used government resources for other than official business and ordered, directed, or requested subordinate employees to perform personal services in violation of DPM sections 1807.1B and C. Next item is two related cases, N. Ray Antoine Wilson.
What's the status? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to discuss that subsequently, but I believe we have a negotiated disposition.
You can get in the details.
I believe it will be resolved.
Okay.
I have rejoined.
Thank you. The next item are two related cases, N. Ray Antoine Wilson and N. Ray Jennifer Niles. Pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 1-1162.12, Subsection A, we opened a preliminary investigation into whether former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor Jennifer Niles violated the Code of Conduct by transferring the Chancellor's daughter to an out-of-boundary school after the start of school year 2017-2018. The Board authorized this as a formal investigation, and we have since interviewed both the former Chancellor and Deputy Mayor for Education and several DCPS employees. I don't believe we have any additional interviews to conduct, and we're meeting with the staff probably next week to go over the results of their investigation and obtain their recommendations. Next matter is N. Ray Jack Evans. This is a formal investigation into whether Council Member Evans violated the Council Code of Conduct by lobbying the Council on behalf of a client for a law firm at which he was employed. In addition, we have received...
Let me stop you there. Based on the notes, this is probably the rest of what you're about to say should probably be in the confidential portion of the...
I can take care of that. Absolutely.
Mr. Sindrum, we haven't opened up for public comment yet. Nope, we have not opened up for public comment yet.
You could talk about
WADA.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Wolfenberg, do you have anything else?
Nothing further at this time.
All right. So we now will move to the public comment portion of the meeting. I will remind everyone that each person is to have 3 minutes. We can start with Mr. Sindrum.
Yeah, I wanted to alert you, Madam Chair. Mr. Flowers, as you know, was the general counsel for the D.C. Council. So not unlike Mr. Sobin stepping out of the room on that issue, with Jack Evans, so should Mr. Flowers, has done so as well. The presentation, Judge Holman, I didn't quite catch. If you could review what was stated about that matter before Brian Holman, Superior Court Judge.
Can you address his concerns? And while you're looking through your notes, Mr. Sindrum, Mr. Sobin did not recuse himself for the investigation relating to Jack Evans.
All right. Well, Mr. Flowers should, because, again, he was general counsel. And I think to avoid the guise of impropriety would be useful for all concerned.
Your comments are noted.
Thank you.
Can you address his question?
Yeah, I believe he's referring to the litigation involving Edwin Edwoke, which is an FDS designation appeal. Judge Holman verbally from the bench, apparently, or maybe in chambers, announced that he was dismissing that petition and upholding the board's ruling on the FDS designation issue. However, that was announced by the judge verbally on February 9th, but no subsequent written order has been issued and signed by the judge.
Is there a case number?
Yes, case number is 2016 C as in Charlie, A as in Apple, 007889P as in Paul, and then in parentheses, M as in Mary, P as in Paul, A as in Apple.
What does that stand for? Any idea?
Merit Personnel Act.
Merit Personnel Act.
Right. And is there an NRA, a name, case caption?
Yeah, it's Edwin Edwoke, and the last name is E-D-O-K-W-E.
Oh, wait, you're going too fast. What is it again?
E as in Edward, D as in dog,
okay.
O as in Ohio, K as in Kansas,
right.
W as in Wyoming, and E as in Eagle.
Okay, and you said the first name again, Edwin.
Edwin, yes, correct.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr.
You may be aware, Madam Chair, Tracy Hughes is running for elective office, D.C. Council at large. I again would urge you, Madam Chair, and the board to bring the Public Service Commission employees under BIGA jurisdiction. We've talked about this more than once. There's no reason why they should be exempted. I'd like to know from you, Madam Chair, what I can do to facilitate bringing the Public Service Commission employees under your watch. I think it's imperative. And when you do it for one, you do it for all, or do it for none. Others can say, why are the Public Service Commission employees exempt when we are not? And that ought not be. Last but not least, I have reached out to Ashley Cooks some months ago for a letter indicating a confirmation that I appear by phone. And I have in hand a letter from the Board of Elections. I'd like to share it with you all. It's on Board of Elections official stationery, and it's addressed to Glenn Miller. He's the director of ADAP, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. And that was the reason that I requested the letter.
Mr. Sidrum, you are actually out of time, but I can very quickly address what I believe is your concern. I have not seen the letter, but I believe a letter has gone out to you on big letterhead that outlines the fact that you are able to participate in these meetings by phone as an accommodation. So that letter has gone out to you. That may be, and
it was read to me. Two concerns. One, the letter to include how long I have been weighing in by phone. The Board of Elections indicates a year and a half. I believe that's as long as I've weighed in with BIGA. The other is that at my request to have the accommodation by phone, not true. I was required more than once to submit medical documentation from doctors, healthcare providers, and whatnot. And I did that to Mr. Flowers more than once. Evidently, it's in his desk drawer or it's been lost, which is not good. And then Ms. Cooks had the audacity to say, send it again, to which I said, on my time, I'll make copies, but give me a Frank-stamped envelope, to which she vigorously declined. So, you know, the documentation was submitted again more than once. And I might add, attempting to connect with Mr. Flowers has been challenging. I've left numerous calls without the courtesy return call, and that's not good.
Mr. Sindrum, I suggest you speak directly to Ashley Cooks if you have concerns about the letter.
Let me cut you off, Madam Chair. I did, and I was shot down, so that's why I bring it to your attention.
There is nothing else I can do about that. Thank you.
Oh. Make it an accurate, truthful letter. That's all I'm asking.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments? At this time, we will move into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B4A to discuss personnel matters, including the appointment employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B13. I move into executive session as previously discussed. All in
favor.
You too, Mr. Syndrome. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The time is now 10:46. We'll move into executive session. All right, the time is now 11:41. We are back into the open portion of the meeting. The board has one matter to report out. That's matter number 1706-001, In Re Rustin Lewis. There is reason to believe that Mr. Lewis has violated the code of conduct, and the board has authorized a formal investigation in this matter. If we have no other matters.
And the issuance of subpoenas.
If we have no other matters, the time is now 11:41, and we will conclude this meeting. The next public meeting is September 6th at 10 a.m. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, if I could be notified.
Could you repeat what you said?
Yeah. Madam Chair, you indicated the next date is September when?
September 6th.
September 6th, okay. And if it's subject to change, not only for August, it's been changed a number of times, if I could be alerted as soon as you all know, it would be helpful.
What did the letter say? What's the agreement?
I don't know. I don't have the letter. But I can tell you the Board of Elections, minimally, when they change, they give it to me in writing. That is a reasonable accommodation.
That actually is not going to happen.
Again?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I'm looking to the staff now to – was that issue addressed?
What issue addressed? If it changes, I'd like to –
I don't believe it was.
It's a minimal reasonable accommodation to have it in writing. I don't know why you're splitting hairs. I mean, you impose fines, expect people to follow the law, and you're not doing it. So please,
how
get it to me in writing.
How do we usually notify him?
It's a reasonable request.
No, he calls us.
A reasonable
correct?
Accommodation, if you will.
We call him for the meeting. I get notified.
On the day of?
On the meeting. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, but what I'm asking is if it changes, subject to change, so it doesn't discombobulate my schedule, and I'm given ample advance notice.
Call him? Is that?
I don't think we would do much more than that.
Okay. So, Mr. Syndrome, the Office of either Open Government or Government Ethics will call you to notify you if that date has changed. But did the letter address whether he notifies us as to whether he is interested in attending the meeting, or do we just assume?
I'm trying to pull
reasonable.
The letter up.
Right.
I'm really interested. I have been attending, and I want to attend. The letter, although I don't have it, doesn't indicate how long I have been given the accommodation of appearing by phone. And the other issue is, if you can't get me by phone in advance of a change meeting, then letter in writing suffices. Again, the Board of Elections, I understand the dog days of summer, dates change, so on. So the Board of Elections has put in place, when they change their meeting, it's sent to me in writing as soon as they know. So I don't understand why you have angst and heartburn to do in kind. It's a reasonable accommodation, and it makes certain that I've given the ample advance notification of a change. And I'll repeat my address, 6645 Georgia Avenue, Northwest.
Mr. St. John, that's not necessary.
Okay, Aaron. The letter simply says that Mr. St. John must notify the agency of his intent to attend the meeting at least 20 minutes prior to the meeting and be available by telephone at least 10 minutes prior to the start of the meeting.
Okay, fair enough. So if there is a change to the September meeting date, then someone from the two offices will notify Mr. Syndrome of that change.
Yes, as a Vegas staff person will call the telephone number he provides.
As indicated by Mr. Flowers, 20 minutes in advance. Ordinarily, when there's the meeting, you all call me, and I'm here on standby. I shouldn't have to hunt you all down. It's a reasonable accommodation to be alerted by you all, not vice versa.
We'll certainly call him and let him know. I mean, there's certainly...
Like you did, but the letter, just as Mr. Flowers read, says I'm to call you 20 minutes in advance. That's not what happened today. What happened today is the reasonable accommodation, that you all alerted me, there's a meeting, it's to begin, boom, we move forward. Not for me to contact you 20 minutes, and then another, I think a 10 minutes later, you'll get with me. That's all, you know, a waste of time.
Mr. Syndrome, there have been cases when we have called you and you have not been available. Therefore, Mr. Syndrome, the accommodation is if you want to participate in a meeting, you will notify the board of your intent to participate in the meeting no later than 20 minutes prior to the meeting. If we change the September meeting from the date that has already been noticed, we will call you in advance to notify you. That is our accommodation.
Well, it doesn't comport with the law. One, in writing, as you indicate, if you can't get my phone, how can I know? And number two, I shouldn't have to hunt you down for the meeting. Just like today, you called me in advance. The meeting is now on. Boom, you got me.
Mr. Syndrome?
20 minutes or whatever, that's not an accommodation. That puts undue burden, expense, and hardship upon me, a disabled veteran who served our country more than most. And again, I don't understand when you find people, you know, and want them to comply with the law, and yet you're refusing to do as much on my end.
Mr. Syndrome, your objection is so noted. Our position stands as outlined in the letter and as I've stated here today. Thank you. We're going to disconnect the phone call now.
What I need to do.
We are going to disconnect the phone call now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Syndrome.
All right, I think we were already adjourned. We were already done. The question that I'm trying to get from you, I don't want to make any representations to him that you all aren't going to abide by. So whose responsibility is it to notify Mr. Syndrome if there's a change in the meeting? The written notice wasn't the question, but it was a fair question on his part. If he thinks the meeting is on the 6th and he calls in 20 minutes prior to, but we move the meeting to the 4th.
Why would we commit to doing anything more than what the open government rules require, just because it's him?
That was...
If we change our meeting, we've got to do... What do? We post it?
Yeah, we post online.
Which is...
Post it on the door.
Which is...
There's a disability. There's like a...
So how did he know that this meeting changed?
So he calls and they read. He calls the office ahead of time. We have not mailed him anything to my knowledge because mailing wouldn't give enough time. But he calls in and someone reads him the agenda. He once asked for us to mail him the agenda. We refused to do that. So because of a disability that I do not believe we have ever actually evaluated.
I've never received any medical information from Mr. Syndrome in all the days I've been in contact.
I did not think that
never.
Was accurate. A decision was made a long time before me that he would get special accommodations. And I have been trying to put parameters around it, including that we don't just assume that he wants to participate. He has to give us notice that he wants to participate and take advantage of the accommodation. And so the letter says 20 minutes beforehand.
And it sounds like we're going to move the date up. Oh, 20 minutes beforehand.
It's possible.
It's really speculative.
Well, I just agreed that for September only. I intentionally did not say in perpetuity. For September only, if we move the date, then we will call him. But
this is an issue that's going to continue to happen. But my understanding, I have not read the letter, but I saw the email, and this has gotten blessed by some agency. Okay.
Maybe they have medical documentation on it.
Are we recognizing that it's a reasonable accommodation in the letter under the ADA?
I'm pretty sure that's. How do you do that? You don't have documentation?
Reference to the ADA. This letter serves as an affirmation of the reasonable accommodation provided by the board for those entitled to the ADA. You requested a reasonable accommodation to attend. Telephones
specifically stated that a physical disability
impairs your ability to attend the board meetings in person. And it goes on to describe how we're going to get
the telephone. Nicole, is this a meeting? We're not making any decisions. We're just talking to our staff. Yeah, we adjourned. Oh, yeah, please.
Never a dull moment.
Yeah. By the way, guys, we weren't talking.